This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. I'm one half of the Two Balds, Mark Stucheski, host of the Mark Stucheski Podcast, coming to you live. Well, when we recorded this, it was live in Houston, Texas. And who might you be, young man?
I am the other half of the Two Bald Nerds. Coming to you live at time of recording in sunny today, Rochester, New York.
Now, this is called the new Two Bald Nerds Podcast, and we were like 12 minutes into recording it, and I looked up and I'm like, I hit record and it wasn't recording. I hit record again. It still wasn't recording. So this is like take two. So hopefully we'll be just as brilliant in the first 12 minutes that is lost forever to the internet. I don't know what happened, Danny.
Go back and listen to the last episode.
Yeah, well, little did we know. Okay, so back on May 23rd, we did an episode called Passwords, Past, Present, and Future. And I thought it would be a great idea to go back and revisit that topic. And because it's getting really challenging to protect yourself on the World Wide Web. So on the show today, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff on how you can protect yourself. Now, before we get started, you need to know something. I am 100% all Mac. I have a MacBook Pro I'm working on right now. Danny is from the world of Windows and Linux. He's begrudgingly in the world of Windows. If he had his choice, he'd be all Linux, but we'll talk about that later. So as we're talking, I'm going to take the Mac side and Danny's going to take the Windows and Linux side. So one of the things I always heard about Mac computers is you don't have to have antivirus because it's protected. And we've talked about this on other episodes, Danny. The Mac operating system, Mac OS, is a closed system where Windows and Linux is more open source. So here are a couple features that are built in to the Mac OS system. They have something called Gatekeeper. Now, Gatekeeper has improved over the years. In the beginning, Gatekeeper would only check software you downloaded from the internet the first time you downloaded it. Now, anything that's not native to Apple, in other words, an Apple-created software, every time you launch that software, it's going to run it through for malware, which I think is really interesting. The other thing it has, and I want Danny to comment on both of these, the other thing they have is something called sandboxing. Now, sandboxing means that apps can only do what they're intended to do. So sandboxing isolates the apps from critical system components of your Mac, your data, and your other apps. Now, Danny, is this possible to have something like the Gatekeeper and sandboxing on an open source system like Windows or Linux?
You certainly can. In a Linux system, I believe it's probably easier to do. It's still very complicated to set systems up this way. There are actually Linux distributions that will do the sandboxing portion of it. If you think of the sandboxing, all it is containerization. So we live in a world where so many things are VMs now in the cloud. When you sandbox something, you're basically taking the application that you've installed and you're saying, I'm only going to give you access to this much space on the drive. I'm only going to give you access to these particular folders. I'm only going to give you access to touch to read from this spot, but not write to it. I'm only going to give you access to use this much memory at maximum memory at any one time. I'm not going to let you touch this part of it. That's what sandboxing. You can do that on Linux. You can actually do it on Windows too. Mac has taken the approach, I believe, a very good approach of building that into their core package, if you will, the whole setup of their operatings.
What do you think about Gatekeeper?
Gatekeeper is another good idea. As you mentioned before, it's a way to protect apps. And if you really break it down, what it is a piece of software that runs, that checks all the software coming in to make sure that it's either from the App Store, which means it's already been approved by Apple, or, as we were talking about the first time around, it has to be from an authorized developer. I think that's the term you used.
Identified developer. So it used to be developer. Yeah, in setting in security and privacy on the Mac, you used to have three options. Allow apps downloaded from App Store and identified developers, and everywhere. Well, Apple said no more everywhere. They want to sign off digitally. They want to make sure, like Danny just said, they want to make sure the app is going to do what it's going to do and what access it's going to have instead of everywhere. Because as you know, Danny, and you did say this, it doesn't really exist because did you really say it? Because we don't have a recording of it. When you download from the internet, when you download from everywhere, you really don't know what's in that .exe file.
That is correct. For Windows machines, you go out, you download a .exe file, which is already pre-compiled. Unless they've given you the source code to that file for you to look at and you want to go look at it, you really don't know. There's a massive level of trust. And then you just put it on your machine and you click it and it'll pop up with a box. Do you want to install? Windows has done a better job as of late warning users of saying this could make changes to your system. Make sure you know what you're doing. Sometimes it'll try to tell you what the system changes are. Sometimes it won't. I've seen it go both ways. Either way, there's still a massive level of trust. In Linux, it's much the same way. Linux has a different way of doing the sandboxing out of the box in that when you set up a Linux system, especially if you have somebody set it up that knows what they're doing, there's two accounts in Linux. There's the user account, which is you. And there's a root account, which is the system administrator account. Generally, if you're going to set up a Linux system, you never, ever, ever use the root account. If I were setting up a system for somebody else and I knew that they weren't going to administer their own system, mm-hmm. I wouldn't even give them access to the root account. The root account is where all of the guts of the operating system live. That way, you can actually allow them to install applications to their own personal folder, and any malicious kind of application would be capped off to just their user space, if you will. So it wouldn't affect the overall machine in its entirety. It would just affect their piece of the machine.
Gotcha.
If you think about it that way. That's kind of like a way that Linux tries to solve the sandboxing out of the gate. And then there's obviously much more complicated ways that you could set the systems up to sandbox, much as Mac has done for you already.
But Mac has an advantage because it's a closed system. So when it's closed system, you can build in more security features than an open source, correct?
It's not that you can necessarily build in more security features. You can build those same security features into Linux. The key with Mac is that they have a massive amount of money behind them and they don't post what their code is.
So
the security features that they're building in, nobody else gets to see how they did it, which makes it obviously from that perspective much more secure. The flip side of that is that only Apple developers can ever fix things, which is the intent. Mm-hmm. With open source, it's more along the lines of, we'd like to be able to let our code be out in the open so that people can see it and look at it as a way of being transparent. But you could still build those same features at the bottom. At the end of the day, you need the money. You need the money and the people that are willing to work on Linux distributions to build those features in. And they do have them. There are Linux distributions out there that build a lot of that stuff in.
Well, I went down a rabbit hole with on Macworld. I Googled, do Macs need antivirus? And Macworld's got a lot of great articles. I sent a couple to you. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. One of the best, this is not an advertisement because I don't know this company, but there's a company here, and I can't see if I find it. It's called, have you ever heard of this company called Intego? Intego. They got a Mac premium bundle. It's only like, it's like really expensive, like $30 the first year. And I may get that deal because I'm like, I do have Clean My Mac on my computer, which is really good for making sure it gets all the unwanted files off there. And it has malware built into it. But I'm thinking in this day and age, I'm constantly connected to the internet. I may go invest in antivirus, even though there's a lot of protection on the Mac OS already, just to give myself another layer of protection, because you know, you get hit with a ransomware attack, you may be out of luck. So I'm going to look into that, do some more research on that. I mean, this stuff is pretty affordable, and I think you can't have too much protection. So that is just the first step we wanted to talk about. Please, you know, make sure you have antivirus, malware, bytes, or something on your computer that's running constantly, or something you go to a company that you can trust. And I would not go to Big Bob's Antivirus. Go to a established company that you can trust to protect your computer. So another thing we want to talk about is, and this is actually a holdover from the May 23rd episode, unique passwords. Now, as I explained in that episode, I look at passwords two different ways. If I have a password for, let's say, fantasy football, or it's something that has no personal information, I may use a weaker password. But I can tell you, passwords for my website, for social media, financial institutions, they have a really long, complicated password, and I never duplicate those. So you agreed with me on this back in May, that if you just have a password for something that's just going to be like your fantasy football, what's someone going to do? Change your football team? I mean, it's no big deal. So I don't think you need to have a complicated password for those. Maybe some people disagree. Have you changed your thoughts on that?
I have not changed my thoughts on that. I believe what I had said in the previous episode, once you're storing any kind of personal information into that account, whether it be personal phone numbers, addresses, or the biggie, if you have to put a credit card in there, then it's got to have a complicated password. If it's just a fantasy football league where you don't have to have a credit card attached to it, and maybe you just have your cell phone in there so that you can have the picks or whatever you're doing with the fantasy football rooted to your cell phone, probably not a big deal. Obviously, when we say a simpler password, we're not suggesting password 123. But you could make it something that's a little bit easier to remember so that it's not so complicated.
Yeah. Something else I want to encourage people to do is, if you have a weak password for this website and you're not going to use that website anymore, go close your account, delete your account.
Yeah.
I mean, most people don't think about that. How many accounts do we have? I was looking at my phone today and I got 40 weak passwords. And I scrolled through there. I'm like, I don't even use these anymore. So I've got to set time aside to go into the account and just delete my account. So instead of changing the password, just delete your account.
Yeah, that's another good call. We all need to do some sort of account maintenance. Same thing with services maintenance. I mean, how many of us are paying for services that we signed up for that are like $2 a month, $3 a month, or maybe it's a yearly service that's like $10 a year, $50 a year. And at the time, we're like, oh, we're really going to use that. $50 doesn't sound like a month much. We used it maybe 4 months, never went back to it. And because it's such a small amount, it just comes out of our check. We might have already budgeted for it already.
Yep.
It's been 5 years. All of a sudden, you look and you're like, why is my money seem? And then you look and you're like, wait a minute. I've got 30 services I'm paying for? I don't have that many, but I do. I was looking at this just the other day. So I, like you, have to set aside time because I've got a bunch of services that I no longer use that I've been paying for. And I can close those services out, which is secure. And I can also save myself some money because I don't need to pay for them.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Duolingo, but I didn't get their $83 a year package. I did the math and it's like $13 a month. And I'm like, okay, am I going to use this every day for a year? And I figured out if you use it 6 months or less, you're better off paying monthly. But for me, paying $13 a month, I'm like, okay, I'm going to use it every day. If I paid $83 a year, I'm like, I'll take a day off here and there. So sometimes paying monthly and paying the extra fee will make you want to use the service. That has nothing to do with security. I just thought I'd put that in there. Okay, Danny, this is going to be your area of expertise. VPNs. I see everyone pushing VPNs. You know, go to my, you know, website, the url.com/myname to get 15% off or something like that, which, by the way, is the same discount for everyone. But two questions for you. Number one, if you are on your home internet? Do you need a VPN? And do you recommend getting a VPN if you're mainly spending, like, let's say you and I, we go out and about, we're using other people's Wi-Fi. I don't use this. I never use a public Wi-Fi when I'm out. I will use the 3G, 4G, 5G because I know it's more protected than the Wi-Fi because you don't know where that Wi-Fi is. It's open source. So what are your thoughts on VPN?
I really like VPNs. Stands for virtual private network, if people aren't aware of what that term stands for. And basically what it is a piece of software that'll run on whatever device you have. It encrypts all traffic coming out of that device from that device to whatever server the VPN is running on. The reason I like VPNs is from a privacy standpoint, even if you're on your home network, and you've got somebody sitting out front of your house on a laptop, they can put software on there. It's called penetration testing software that will snoop networks and find holes in it.
Oh, wow.
And they can crack networks if they're weak enough, especially if your Wi-Fi password is not strong.
Password 1234, which and, mine is not.
Well, and the other thing, too, is a lot of people don't realize that when they get routers from Comcast, Spectrum, Verizon, they're provided to them by their internet service providers. The admin password for most of these routers is usually the username of admin and no password.
Wow, I've got to make a note, sick mind.
Most people don't realize that that happens a lot. So even if your wireless connection is set to be a complicated password, the admin password for the router may be very simple. Not a big deal as long as the router's default setting is that you cannot access the admin screen from the wireless network.
Okay.
But that is a switch that can be turned on. I know because I've done it on mine. It should always be off by default. So you should only be able to connect to the admin screen if you're hardwired into your internet.
Well, I got something I got to do later today. I didn't even think about that.
And you'll obviously need to know what your default page is for getting to that router admin screen. You can usually find that in any of your paperwork, or you can usually go to the website of the service provider and do a search there. Like, I'm Spectrum. I could go to spectrum.com, look up my router number, and it'll tell me what my admin, because it's not a page. It's not like it's admin.com. It's actually an IP address. So it'll be like a 162.198.4.5 number. Mm-hmm. And then you'll put that in there in a web browser, and it'll come up and it'll give you a login screen for your router. And if you log into your router, it'll give you access to see all of the information about your router, what kind of networks you have on there, what bands you're running in, what channels you're on. A lot of that might sound gobbledygook. Maybe we can go over that in another episode.
Yeah, I think we need to go. This is going to be, we have an idea for a new episode, because right. I think VPN, we can easily talk 45 minutes. So we'll truncate this now. And maybe that's, Danny gets to pick the next episode. So maybe we'll talk about VPNs. We'll find out at the end of the show, because this is a full episode. I did not realize how much of a content we can have for VPN. Yeah. So
VPNs, but to summarize, VPNs are a good idea because not even your internet service provider can see what's coming out of your machines. Mm. So it literally, because it's encrypted from the minute it leaves, and it's not just apps that are encrypting your stuff. It's every bit of information that leaves your machine is being encrypted from your machine to the VPN. You just got to be careful about the VPN provider that you're picking. Do your research. We could do another longer episode, but I'll leave it at that.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think we have to do that. All right. Next is, Danny and I talked about this before, 2FA, two-factor authentication. This is becoming more and more prevalent. I think it's really secure. So I'm in Houston, as I said earlier. My dad's in Lake Wales, Florida, which is south of Orlando. And when I have to troubleshoot something for him and I want to log into his account, Apple sends him a code, which he's got to read me, so I have access into his account. It's really important because passwords are great. Really unique, complicated passwords are great. But this two-factor authentication gives you another layer of protection, because if someone's trying to hack into your account, they have to have your username, your password, and they got to have one of your other devices. And most times they don't have any. They're just logging in from someplace in China or Asia. And so they don't have your laptop, your watch, your iPad, your phone, or anything. And so this is really important. So if the service you are using, I don't care what service out there has it, Amazon, they won't use 2FA. They got their OTR, whatever that OTA, whatever thing that, you know, I think they should come up with a standard. Everyone should use 2FA because 2FA is just so important. So if your service offers it, if someone goes, hey, you know, Spectrum is now offering two-factor, jump on it. It's going to protect you. My web service, I use Kajabi. They just came out now with two-factor. Two-factor has taken the world by storm, and I think if your service provider offers it, you got to jump on it.
I agree. Two-factor is definitely a way to go. It's just an added level. The more levels of security you can have, the better protected you are.
100%. Now, let's talk about passcodes on your phone. Now, if you don't know this, I'm an iPhone guy. I know Danny is as well. Do not have your passcode all numbers because people can see. I mean, I've seen people sitting next to me in church or Bible study or in a restaurant. I'm like, oh, 775511. I mean, come on. You can change it. You probably can change it on the Android as well. You go into your settings and you go to the passcode section and you can change it to alphanumeric. Now, I don't have a 17 alphanumeric uppercase, lowercase, special characters. That'd be a pain in the butt every time I got to unlock my phone after an update, but it's not password 1234 either. So by you having your passcode more complicated, alphanumeric, you're going to protect yourself more. And the other thing is, please, for the love of all things holy, please do not leave your phone continuously unlocked. I know people that do this, or they set it for like 10 minutes. Mine set for 30 seconds. And even better than that, when I'm done using my phone, I lock it right away. You don't understand. I've had people have their phone stolen from a restaurant and they put the phone on the corner and they're just chatting with their friends. Someone goes by, the phone is gone and they left it unlocked. And so all their information is available. So what do you think about those two things I just talked about?
Yeah, I'm down with both of those. My passcode on my iPhone is definitely not just numbers. Because my phone is a company, I would do this on my personal phone anyway, but because my phone is a company phone, they actually enforce certain passcode restrictions. I shouldn't say restrictions, rules. And they make me change it every 6 months. Every oh, wow. 6 months, I have to change the passcode, the actual passcode on my phone.
Yeah, that's something I should do. I'm always afraid because I've got the passcode memorized, but I haven't changed it in a while. The biggest fear is if you change it and forget it, you have to completely erase your phone and so back
not,
to reset.
Not necessarily, because what I do is when I do change the passcode, I have a note. So I use a password manager. We talked about this in the previous incarnation of this episode back in May. I used Bitwarden as my password manager. A lot of password managers will also let you use notes, mm-hmm. but you're an Apple guy. So you can create, I think you can create an encrypted Apple note. I have a note in my password manager that keeps all of my, that I keep my most current passcode. I actually keep the last three just in case, because I'm crazy like that. In case if for some reason I use one and it's not the right one, try to remember, make sure I actually changed it. Because, you know, sometimes you get caught in those weird loops.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need the previous and the new when you're trying to reset, you know, change stuff. So I keep at least the last two. And because that's stored in the cloud and it's part of my password manager, and I can get to that password manager from my laptop, from my desktop, from any machine that I'm connected to, if I did lock my phone out, I could still go to one of my other computers, password manager and get it, right? That would be the best way to do it so that you don't. But you're right. If you're a primary just device user and you don't track that somewhere else, then yes, you're hosed. You have to do a full hard reset on your phone and bye-bye.
Yeah. And here's the thing. A lot of people frown on writing down passwords. You can write passwords down. Just don't say, this is my iCloud Apple ID. Just write down the password, and someone's going to go, oh, this is the password. They'll have no idea what it's for. So don't say Apple password. Here it is. Maybe you say, okay, on, you know, this page is going to be, you know, for Apple or Xfinity. So there's ways to do it. Just use common sense. All right. Let's go on to another thing I read it. Pay with your phone or your watch. So Danny and I both have iPhones. We both have Apple watches. They have proven Apple Pay is the safest and most secure way to pay. Why? First of all, it takes your credit card number and makes a different number out of it. That's number one. Number two, when you go to pay for it, and I'm talking in person at like a restaurant or a store, it sends the new credit card to the point of sale machine and a one-time token. The only way you can hack in, and no one's been able to hack in the Apple Pay, is you'd have to actually be sitting right next to the person, or probably within 20 feet. And in that microsecond, you would have to get the new credit card number, the expiration date, and the token, and process your order in like a microsecond. It's impossible. You can't do it because it happens so quickly. I've never heard of anyone being hacked into the Apple Pay system. And so I love having the Apple Pay on my watch. And it's cool. I went to, on my cheat day, because I'm doing Tim Ferriss's slow carb diet. Sunday was my cheat day. Went to buy some donuts. And the guy said, here's the total. And I just did my watch. He's like, that is so stinking cool. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? So pay with your iPhone or your watch. It's encrypted. You know, I got ripped off a couple months ago. I used my debit card has this Wi-Fi symbol on it. And so I thought I was being secure. So I just waved it in front of the machine and it took it. But then somebody sniffed it. They must have been sitting in the parking lot, started buying all this Coinbase stuff. Now, fortunately, the $3,000 was returned to me. But you want to use stuff that's completely encrypted. So what are your thoughts on that?
I use Apple Pay all the time. I have a couple of different cards linked to it.
Yep.
And it's awesome. And it's great no matter where you are. I wish more establishments would start using it. They've come a long way.
Yes.
In the last 3 to 5 years since I started.
Especially since COVID. Since COVID, yeah. A lot more people are adopting it.
Yep, absolutely. There's still a few holdouts. Like, for some reason, Wendy's still doesn't do. I don't know what the deal is.
Where Danny likes to go to eat.
I'm just saying.
You know what it is? It's they have to upgrade the infrastructure. So some companies like Sprouts and Aldi, boom, they jump right on it. Other companies, like we have Kroger here down in the South, and they're like, man, we have to replace all the machines. Now, here's what's going to happen. Eventually, there's some kind of new law going into effect. I don't know if it's gone into effect, and they've got a certain time frame that all vendors are going to have to accept all wireless contactless payments. It's a law. It's for security. I want to see it at the gas stations, because I think nothing would protect you more than having Apple Pay at the gas station to go up there and just flash your Apple Watch there and Apple Pay pays for it, because you can't steal it there. I know it's a big, tremendous infrastructure upgrade, but they're going to have to do it eventually anyway. So, you know, I know you have Google Pay and Samsung Pay. Kroger does this thing where you scan a barcode or scan a QR code. That's not as secure. It's still going to be hacked. Apple cannot be hacked. All right. One more thing I want to talk about, and I'll let Danny give his final thoughts before we wrap up the show today. And that is using different email addresses. So with iOS 15, and now we have iOS 16 now, they have a feature called Hide My Email. Danny, I love this feature. And you can only use it on Safari. Or, no, more particularly, it's not updated on the macOS yet. On Safari, on your iPhone. You go there and you want to sign up for someone's email newsletter. So you tap the email address box and it'll come up and says, hey, do you want to use Hide My Email? Which is really cool because it comes up with this weird email address and it goes to your Apple ID. So I use Google, what do they call it now? Google Workspace for Business. They keep changing every 3 months. And that's where my Apple ID is tied to. So what happens is, I will get an alert from Apple saying, hey, we've assigned you this Hide My Email. The person that's going to email me They don't know my real email address. And all I have to do is I don't have to unsubscribe. All I have to do is delete that email. It's really cool. And so use unique email addresses. People sign up for my email list all the time. It'll be like Mark Strucheski newsletter at, you know, whatever their email address is to protect themselves. So consider using different email addresses. Don't use the same email address for everything, because that's where you run into problems.
Yeah, I like this. And this is something that's been rolling out. Apple, I think, started it. There are some email providers that will allow you to create multiple
aliases. Yeah.
And I know for a fact that the password manager I use, and we don't get sponsored by anybody, although maybe someday that would be nice. I use Bitwarden a lot. I love them as a password manager. Within the last couple of updates, what they can do now is that if you have one of these services that allows these multiple aliases, you can actually auto-generate usernames based on the email aliases for your service.
Nice.
So when you create, you go to a web page and you want to actually create an account, you can auto-fill and auto-generate at the time of creating the web page from the Bitwarden plugin for the web browser that you're using, the username and the password auto-generated automatically, and then it saves it automatically into your Bitwarden password manager. So you don't even have to think about it. Then you can go back into Bitwarden later on, look at the account, and then you'd obviously be able to see what username it made, what password it made. I have a lot of my Bitwarden passwords set to be like 25 characters with letters and numbers and weird characters and stuff. I'm not sure if my service provider that I use for my email right now is using that. I have to check. The last time I checked, which was a few months ago, they weren't doing the aliases. But I think I just saw an email come across that it's out or it's coming out. And the minute I get it on mine, because I use Zoho Mail, Z-O-H-O Mail, as my main provider. Because again, I'm anti-Google. If I can keep away from Google, I stay away from Google. I have a Google calendar so that I can share calendars out with people and stuff. But the Zoho is really good. If they've gotten on board with the aliases, then I'll be doing that out of my password manager.
Okay, well, we've talked about a half an hour today in the show. We're going to wrap it up for you. Danny, any final thoughts on keeping safe on the internet before we put a bow on this episode?
I'm just going to hit a couple touch points. We've talked about a lot of things. I suggest first go back and listen to that previous episode, because we covered a lot of stuff back then too. This is kind of an extension of that. Make sure whenever you're looking at emails, you're paying attention to where they're coming from.
Yes.
Most viruses come from email scams or phishing scams. Nowadays, it's on the phone. You get them stupid random text messages with a link that says, oh, your Amazon account is about to be suspended. Click here to make sure you're okay. Don't ever answer those. Go back to the original people that it's coming from and double check there. Same thing with emails. The best practice is, if you're just not sure, verify with the original source first if the email was really from them or not, because they're all tracking those things. And A, they'll tell you, and B, they record that stuff. They will literally have you send them a copy of the email. I've had that happen before. Yep. I've had both Amazon and Citibank do it, where they wanted a copy of the email, the phishing email that I got, so that they could log it and give it to their IT department. So they are tracking.
And phishing is really high tech now. So let's say you have Bank of America. The email could look like it came from sales@bankofamerica.com. It looks legit. But someone told me this many years ago, if you hover over a link, even though it says bankofamerica.com or it says DanielBourne@bankofamerica.com, that's not his email address. And you hover over it, it says, 26755LQ@ripyouoff.com. So if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. My dad called me once in a panic a month ago. He goes, I got a call from Amazon, said that they just charged me $20,000 or something like that. I said, Dad, okay, did you get charged 20 grand? He goes, well, no. Did you go to the Amazon app? Did you check your orders? Yeah, there's nothing there. You didn't get charged, Dad. What they want you to do is call in to verify, air quotes here, verify that you made the purchase. And then once you do that, you get charged. So use common sense. And if you know someone who's elderly, and I know Danny's going to agree with me on this, tell them if you're in doubt to call you.
Yes.
So my dad always calls me and says, "What? No, Dad, it's a scam." So if you know someone elderly, reach out to them and say, if you have any doubts about an email or a phone call, call me. My mother, she passed away in June of 2022 to Alzheimer's. She had her computer re-imaged 3 times because she kept clicking these links and she get all these viruses on her computer. So stop and think, go, wait a minute. Why would Amazon be sending me an email about a charge for $1,000 didn't go through? I didn't order anything. I don't even have an Amazon account. So think before you click.
Absolutely. And when in doubt, verify. Whether it's through the company, call somebody you trust, just get a second opinion from somebody. That usually helps.
100%. All right. We gave him a lot to chew on today, Danny. Now, Danny and I go back and forth on these episodes, and I already have my next episode picked out. This is not the next episode. This is my next episode. This is 2 episodes away. I am fascinated, and we're looking into getting solar for our house. We live in the South, lots of sun down here. And one of the things, I don't know about Danny, like when we talked about a couple weeks ago, we talked about cryptocurrency. So I come up with an idea, and then we come up with the idea for the show, and I do research. So it's a 2-prong. I get to help you guys, and I get to learn something. So in 2 episodes, not next time, the one after that, we're going to talk about solar and who should get solar. Is solar worth it? How does solar work? But Danny, what is your topic for the next episode?
VPN.
Yeah, I think I like to talk about VPNs. Okay. Mark, let it slip.
No, I think when you and I were talking about it and you were just going on and on, I'm like, this is an episode. This is an episode.
Because there's things you got to look out for and certain things.
And here's my challenge VPN. To you. I want you to give us some recommendations. I'm going to get mine. I'm going to find out who Danny's using after the show today. You'll have to wait till next week. I want you to do some research and find out, you know, give people options. Here's what you recommend. Based on the reviews. So I think we should get in this. Now, none of this is sponsored, so we're not going to get any money from people. This is just the research we're going to do for that. And if you have an idea for an episode, Danny, if there was only a way that people could let us know, what do you think?
Well, Mark, now that you mention it, there is a way they can let us know.
Really? No, there say is. It isn't so.
We have a WhatsApp channel.
What?
Go no, WhatsApp. So if you go to WhatsApp and you look up the number 2, bald, B-A-L-D, nerds, N-E-R-D-Z.
Zed for English people.
Zed, thank you. Ask to join in. We'll let you jump in. You can suggest show topics. You can talk about past shows. You can just stop by and say hi because Mark and I are the only ones in there right now and we're lonely. We'd love to have you join the conversation for sure.
Yeah. So we really love doing these episodes. And as you can tell from this episode today, we just like, hey, we're not Joe Rogan's yet. So we had to tamp it down. I only got through half my notes and we just love talking about nerdy things. So next week, VPNs, the week after that, solar panels on your house. And I'm really excited about it. So, and then go to WhatsApp group, give us some ideas, or just say hi. We're lonely. You know, it's not that I mind Danny, but I want to hear you. And I know Danny wants to hear you as well.
Absolutely.
So Danny, before we let them go, there's one thing that everyone who listens to the show must be and stay doing. What is that?
Must stay nerdy.